Good morning and welcome to the Dante Blogs Morning Coffee podcast. Hope you're having a great morning and a great day. We are, very, very cold here. It's a beautiful, sunny -5 degrees, I think. And it's a perfect day for a bit of podcasting. So we are going to talk about two things today. The first is a few tercets in Dante's Paradiso, Canto 13. And then we're going to talk more about Marc Andreessen. He is then again he's a heavyweight in Silicon Valley. He founded Netscape. He has billions of dollars. And he has two very interesting threads on his X account, the Twitter account, both a manifesto and also some white-pilling kind of little short, inspiring little takes on things. So we are going to look at that. And then we're going to, in the spirit of Dante, we're going to unite this now on this in this episode with a bit of the deep philosophy, theology, spiritual part, and some more kind of current times, technology, the future, and also just encouraging signs of things improving. So first, we're going to look at then, we're at verse 37 in Paradiso 13. And then we just had St. Thomas, who started to talk again after this mystical vision that Dante has, or the pilgrim has. And then, like those two circles of souls around him, it stops, there's a bit of silence, and then St. Aquinas, St. Thomas, starts to speak. Okay, so this is a bit of a kind of deep dive right into some I wouldn't say heavy, but it's kind of, it's it is kind of profound things there. But it's also shifted gears now into the more rational intellectual, so it's more easy to grasp. So previously we had kind of just one tercet per episode because there was so much to say. Now it's like five tercets we're going to take in one argument, and then with a beautiful ending. So in this kind of in the spirit of Aquinas, like the Summa Theologia, like the his main work on theology, 5,000 pages. It's a little bit the same kind of argumentation that Dante is putting into the verse here. So it starts with "Tu credi che nel petto onde la costa si trasse per formar la bella guancia il cui palato a tutto il mondo costa." So Thomas is now bringing up two things. He's starting to address the question from the pilgrim, like his second question, his second doubt, which was about how come you can say that King Solomon was kind of the wisest person ever of all time. So Thomas starts here saying that you believe that in the chest, from whence it was formed, the beautiful cheeks, meaning like from Adam you had Eve, il cui palato tutto il mondo costa, like whose, like the then Eve's, whose palate cost the whole of the world, meaning that's referring to the fall, eating the fruit. But much more important than eating the fruit, like a symbol of transgression of reality. Like there's a point here that the fall, in a sense, is about human arrogance not accepting realities, like putting their own ideas, their own beliefs above realities, the same that's described in the Tower of Babel and in countless Greek mythologies about hubris. It's just the same warning that when humans deny reality because of their own arrogance, then they start digressing, they start deviating, straying from reality, and then you will have distortion and a lot of problem and destruction, which is kind of obvious to see what has happened the last, especially 10, 15 years, is that you have this idea of human culture trying to deny realities and recreating something in like the human arrogant, overconfident image. And then you see just like suffering, destruction, and and distortion. Luckily, it's not going to last for long. But anyways, so he starts with that. The second tercet is then, in quel che forato della lancia e prima e poscia tanto soddisfece che d'ogni colpa vince la bilancia. So this is referring to then the crucifixion with the lance in the side of the breast that made that won the scales, like the equilibrium, meaning it that event made into balance again humanity, both like before and ever after, in terms of this beginning arrogance and hubris, which is now that event creates this element, in a sense, of the human collective consciousness, which starts to rectify these things and opens up the possibility to find this unity and balance of uniting with more of like the heavens. Okay, and then he continues. So now he has made two references to Adam and to the crucifixion, to the Christ figure here. And then, quantunque alla natura umana lece aver di lume, tutto fosse infuso da quel valor che l'uno e l'altro fece. And then he says that like both of them had wisdom. So he keeps referring to that the pilgrim, like you are thinking that these two figures have like the light, the wisdom of the divine, or they were infused by this in a way, since both of them were made by the divine. And Thomas continues, e però miri a ciò che io dissi suso. Quando narrai che non ebbe il secondo, lo bean che nella quinta luce è chiuso. So, and because you are looking at what I said earlier about King Solomon, when I said there was no second to him, like no equal, non ebbe il secondo, like the goodness or the wisdom that is in the fifth light closed or enclosed. And Solomon is like the fifth spirit, the fifth soul in that circle. And then he says, so he's setting up an argument here, like you think that these two figures have like the fullest wisdom because they were made directly by the divine. So why did you say that King Solomon was the wisest? And then here comes the beautiful. So this is the only tercet that is brings in some sense like a new metaphor, but it's very beautiful. So, ora apri gli occhi a quel che io ti rispondo. So, now open your eyes to that which I am responding to you. E vedrai il tuo credere e il mio dire. And you will see that your faith, your belief, your assumption, and my sayings, or what I am saying, nel vero farsi come centro in tondo. Meaning, in truth, it will make itself the center of a circle. So, it's just a beautiful part of the last verse there, nel vero farsi come centro in tondo, because it's like an active way of saying that your thoughts and your assumptions here and my truth, they kind of converge together as one thing, as a true idea that will be just like the center of a circle. And then you can think of the circle as a symbol of truth, timelessness, perfection, and also something divine, which connects us in a sense to what we had in the beginning of the canto, which is this celestial cosmic vision of the North Star and like all of the heavens revolving around it. Now you had this in a tiny little point about discerning truth, that in the same way that you can look up to the highest possible kind of level and beyond, you can also think of this as discerning one little truth has some similarity to aligning with the transcendent truth, the bigger truth. So just rectifying one little misunderstanding, for example, or exploring and then discerning and understanding one new little truth idea is to align yourself to the bigger transcendent truth, which is moving you like on the ascent up to something bigger, more towards the truth and the good and also the beautiful. So all of that, could say, is packed into this idea here that Aquinas is saying that like just follow what I'm saying now and you will understand something that brings you more to the truth, into the which will make the center of a circle in a tiny way an echo of what we had in the first eight tercets of this canto. Okay, so that was the Dante reading for today. And then we're going to move on to Marc Andreessen and Silicon Valley tech heavyweights. and what he is saying. In we're just going to look at the manifesto. We might look at the white pilling later, but it's recommended to just go and check his X account, and it's kind of 30 something white pills from the last 2 years, I think. And they are interesting and good. So, but we're going to look at the last four parts of his techno-optimist manifesto. And we just say in general, it's really, really good stuff. We just want to add one little thing, which is about the big picture. So what is kind of, I think in general, he takes a few things for granted that we just want to point out, which is again about virtue and about truth and about the transcendent anchoring of your outlook. For many, many people, maybe even most people, this is by instinct made right. So people are not even aware of it. Like most people have an like a innate compass towards like, well, you want the world to be a good place. And you would have to relate to realities to make the world a good place. So then you would think that you will set the focus in other places than what seems maybe too obvious to point out. So, okay, that's the conceptual part. So we're going to look at it concretely now. So he says here, in part 12 of the Techno-Optimist Manifesto, which is called The Meaning of Life. So that's interesting. So he says here, techno-optimism is a material philosophy, not a political philosophy. We are not necessarily left-wing, although some of us are. We are not necessarily right-wing, although some of us are. We are materially focused for a reason, to open the aperture of how we may choose to live amid material abundance. Material abundance from markets and technology, so here comes an important point, opens the space for religion, for politics, and for choices of how to live socially and individually. We believe technology is liberatory. Liberatory of human potential, liberatory of the human soul, the human spirit, expanding what it can mean to be free, to be fulfilled, to be alive. We believe technology opens the space of what it can mean to be human. Which is true, but it requires something deeper, which is an alignment to virtue. So in itself, technology is a bit like some of the assumptions. Like if you look at his whole, the canvas that he's stretching out, is like growth and technology are the gods that he are worshipping as the liberating forces of good life. But it's like, yeah, but both of them can be misused. They are not top values. You have to put the bigger frame, the big picture has to be virtue all the same. Because if not, or if you do that, then technology will be a force for good. So in some sense, the problem here, so this is kind of the crux of it, is that you can infer from what he's saying that as long as you have technology, it will liberate this open free world where people can just do what they want. You can liberate politics and religion, for example. So yes, but if those forces are on top in the image of vices, then you get distortion again, and technology becomes a negative force. So technology is liberatory, yes, if it hinges on something higher or deeper or bigger, which is the virtue. It is the values. It is the moral values. People don't like to hear this, but it's like when things are starting to stray too much, this becomes more and more apparent that there is a moral fabric, and just if it strays too much, it becomes more and more evident. So I 100% agree what he says, although You can even be a little bit more detailed on this. What he says is good if he actually, in his mind, has the frame of virtue. But the problem is that if you take this part, which is more the practical, like he says, a material philosophy, and you make that the big picture, then it becomes full of risk, and eventually it will start to drift. So that is why you don't have to think about this in good times if the main focus, the main kind of, what should you call it, the spirit of the time is more or less aligned with the good values. You don't have to think about this. But now we do have to think about this. We have to point out that there is something above this. Okay, so that was part 12. And then we're going to look at the one before, part 11, which he calls technological values. We believe in ambition, aggression, persistence, relentlessness, strength. We believe in merit and achievement. We believe in bravery and courage. We believe in confidence, pride, self-respect when earned. Very important. We believe in free thought, free speech, and free inquiry. We believe in the actual scientific method and enlightenment values, blah, blah, blah. We believe in risk agency and competition, evolution. And then comes a good point. We believe in the truth. That's one of the big ones. The other things are also secondary or derivative values, like merit, achievement. It depends in what image. Again, we keep repeating this. I'm sorry, but it's just like it needs to be kind of massaged into the mind, into the culture, in a sense, until it becomes automatic. That all of these things, yes, but it has to be aimed at something. It is not the top value. Again, truth is a top value. So that's good. And then he says something great. We love this part. We believe in what the Greeks called eudaimonia through arete, flourishing through excellence. Yes, this is a big and deep and foundational topic. So eudaimonia is, in a sense, the Greek idea of happiness, a happy life, long-term, through engaging, through participating in virtue with your life, with your actions. So the foundation here, virtue, and then we can just repeat like those four foundational primary virtues in the Greek, which was also taken up in the Catholic later, in Dante especially, or very clearly. So you have prudence, you have fortitude, you have temperance, and you have justice. So especially prudence, because people think prudence is about like carefulness, but it is more about discerning what is true and what is morally good. That is the first of the four primary virtues, the cardinal virtues. And that is the basis of the other ones. But all those four are kind of working together. Okay, so those, you can say those are the four prime virtues from the Greeks. And arete is then something like the action of this, like is the way you express this and fulfill this in achievement and in excellence. But it has to be in accordance with those virtue values as well, like performance, like good performance, excellence, and achievement in the wrong image is not a good thing. It will not lead you to happy life. So if you have huge success through deceit, through cheating, through scamming people, through fraud, that is not arete. That is not this expression of virtue through action. So this also, eudaimonia through arete, yes, as long as it is in the image of virtue, as long as it's aligned with some higher transcendent values of virtue, then it's perfect. And then again, it seems like Marc Andreessen has this just by nature. So for him, this overall aim, the guiding system or compass, seems to be in place. And that might be why he's not mentioning it. Maybe he doesn't even see it, because it's experienced as so obvious. Okay, and then, so that's a great part there. It's just like a little footnote, like, yes, as long as it's aimed rightly. Okay, so that was number 11. And then we have two more of his manifesto, the two last ones, 13 and 14. So part 13 is called The Enemy. We have enemies. Our enemies are not bad people, but rather bad ideas. Our present society has been subjected to a mass demoralization campaign for 6 decades. Sounds true. Against technology and against life, now comes a bit contemporary time stuff here, under varying names like existential risk, sustainability, ESG, sustainable development goals, social responsibility, stakeholder capitalism, precautionary principle, trust and safety, tech ethics, risk management, degrowth, the limits of growth. This demoralization campaign is based on bad ideas of the past, zombie ideas, Many derived from communism, disasters then and now that have refused to die. Our enemy is stagnation. So here becomes, here he is political. Then you might say that that is a consequence of the values, which is true. So in a sense, you can infer from this that he has the compass, right? His our enemy is anti-merit, anti-ambition, anti-striving, anti-achievement, anti-greatness. And it's not just like the right values, it is based on truth, on reality. That is kind of the main point, is that it's actually in the bigger picture, if you don't accept realities and base your life and your assumptions on truth and realities, it will just be like a house of cards. It will just collapse, and it will be, it could be really bad when it happens. I mean, you can build your life on a little fantasy. You can start in your teens or in your early 20s and think like, oh, but I would like the world to be like this. And then I can see maybe that is not fully true, but I would rather live in a fantasy. And then that could work for you maybe 10 or 20 or 30 years. But then at some point, there will be something like the just like the reality will hit you in the face. So, and you cannot base society and the culture on it, because then the suffering and the problems will just amplify and multiply like tremendously. So again, I just mentioned this because this is a part where he is really taking a stand. So our enemy is deceleration, degrowth, depopulation, the nihilistic wish, so trendy among our elites, true, for fewer people, less energy, and more suffering and death, which is absurd, but it rings a little bit true. And then he has a quote from The Last Man by Friedrich Nietzsche, or Nietzsche, as some people say, which is interesting. Like, we are no fans of Nietzsche here, but he has... If you read Nietzsche as a warning, because he has many things very precisely true, he also has some of the warnings exactly right, but he's a little bit trapped in a negative outlook himself, which might be why he drifted into mental illness and just like madness in the end. So you can take him as a cautionary tale, or like a just like a warning, like this type of mentality is very destructive. But again, it's a helpful way of learning to see the signs and the symptoms. But he talks about the last man, I tell you. So quoting here, one must still have chaos in oneself to give birth to a dancing star. I tell you, you have still chaos in yourselves. That is partly true, but it's not fully true. You can also give birth to dancing stars without the chaos. You can do it in calm, beauty, bliss, harmony as well, if you aim at the right things and you sort out your head and your soul properly. Alas, he continues, there comes a time when man will no longer give birth to any star. Alas, there comes the time of the most despicable man who can no longer despise himself. What is love? What is creation? What is longing? What is a star? So asks the last man and blinks. The earth has become small, and on it hops the last man who makes everything small. His species is ineradicable as the flea, the last man lives longest. So it's almost like you can sometimes detect a little kind of battle of, like internal battle in Nietzsche that he is losing to the lesser part of himself, and he is in many ways like it's a cry of help, much of his writing, because it's so destructive, in part because his mental capacity is so enormously forceful and strong, so he can't rein it in. So that is a part of how you can think of Nietzsche. And it's also like, formerly all of the world was insane, say the subtlest of them, and they blink. They are clever and know all that has happened, so there is no end to their derision. We have discovered happiness, say the last men, and they blink. Which is big literature. Okay, and then Andreessen continues, our enemy is that. We inspire to be not that. We invite everyone to join us in Techno Optimism. Become our allies in the pursuit of technology, abundance, and life. Okay, and then the last part, number 14, is then called The Future. Our civilization was built on a spirit of discovery, of exploration, of industrialization. Where are we going? Are we going in a world of fear, guilt, and resentment, or a world of ambition, abundance, and adventure? We believe in the words of David Deutsch. We have a duty to be optimistic. This is beautiful. Because the future is open, not predetermined, and therefore cannot be accepted. We are all responsible for what it holds. This is our duty to fight for a better world. Exactly. This is really, really good. And this ties into to everything we keep talking about in all different the different forms here about... this is also at the center of the whole Divine Comedy and that whole cosmology in itself. The free will, your responsibility to use your free will towards the good, towards what will bring the fruits of Paradiso and not the fruits of Inferno. And it's important to think like this, that you have the agency to decide this, you can choose, and this is the test for you during your lifetime. Like, how do you exercise your free will? Where do you aim? How do you work on this? What are the fruits of your choices? Both as an individual, and you can also say this has to be or could be taken up a level to how the culture is working at large. So he ends this with, we owe the past and the future. It's time to be a techno-optimist. It's time to build. Beautiful. The last words are kind of the lingering ones, so like just optimist and building, and that is so good. So we are supporting really his whole endeavor here and also his message. And still, we just have to put that in that don't forget the embedding bigger frame. Because you can take some of this and then you can reorient it to something less positive or some other aims, and then it will not work. So just remember the bigger frame. It can only be like 2% or 5% of your conscious thinking, but it has to be there. And then you can just focus on all the stuff that he's saying, where he is just very constructive and industrious and and aiming for kind of bright, beautiful, positive future, and how also... like we're using here, like the chatbots now more and more, like we're having the sidekick Claude, like as a force for good, to explore and to just enrich our own experience and accelerate also like our path into a better future. So that is our little take on his techno, what does he call it? Techno-Optimist Manifesto from Mark Andreessen. Okay, so this was almost half an hour. We're going to try to keep these episodes shorter than 30 minutes as kind of a daily little input. And that's all we had for today. So hope you're still having a great morning that is not too cold wherever you are. And that is maybe also like a sunny day like emerging now. And hope you have a good cup of coffee. And with that, see you again very soon in a new episode. Bye-bye.